Well, good morning. This is Per Fagren, KBOO News and Public Affairs. And as Janet has told you, our guest is Michael Clare, who will be speaking April 21st on oil, water, and global security. Michael Clare is a professor of peace and world security studies at Amherst College. And he's the author of that book, Blood and Oil, The Dangers and Consequences of America's Growing Dependency on Imported Petroleum. Michael, welcome to KBOO.
Good morning there.
Yeah, well, it is morning here. I don't know where you're on the East Coast, I guess.
Yeah, it's just turned noon.
Okay. Well, let's start. What is peace and world security studies?
Well, actually, I should say this is a joint program of five colleges. It's Amherst, Smith, Mount Holyoke, Hampshire College, and the University of Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And my job is to stimulate student and faculty interest in international affairs, especially international peace and conflict affairs, and to expand teaching in this area. And, of course, I teach myself on contemporary conflict issues and now increasingly on global resource conflict.
Mm-hmm. Is it a separate department or is it under some other department?
No, it's a separate program mm-hmm. run by the five college consortium, by these colleges jointly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember years ago I was going to take a master's thing in international relations, but after taking one course I found out there's sort of two things you do with that degree. You either teach or you sort of go to work for the empire.
Well, so, I think things have changed.
I hope
now.
So, yeah.
Because, well, what I emphasize and my students want is experience that they could use working for international NGOs and international organizations like
mm-hmm.
Amnesty International or Human Rights Watch or environmental organizations. A lot of my students and others are viewing that as a career path to work in the international NGO community.
Yeah, they didn't have so many of them back when I was going to college.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one of the things we learned in that course was, you know, they had this idea that whoever controls the Euro-Asian heartland controls the world. This is sort of a dogma, you know, of the foreign policy people in Washington. And I don't know if it's true or not. I mean, it seems to me that even if one power controlled Eurasia, you know, you'd still have Latin America and North America. But anyway, there seems to be a real repeat of the great game going on in Eurasia these days.
Well, that's absolutely right. But what is fueling this, quite figuratively, is the global pursuit for oil and natural gas. And if you view the central area, to include the Persian Gulf and North Africa, as well as Central Asia, let's call that the central region, that is the area that is the focus of intense jockeying for power by the United States, Russia, and China. And I think this jockeying for power in the energy center areas is going to be the defining factor in international relations for the rest of the century.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know you wrote an article for The Nation. I guess it's a very recent Nation that the U.S. is moving troops from Germany and Japan and South Korea. We're not sure exactly where they're headed, but it looks like Eastern Europe, the Caspian region, and Africa.
That's correct, and that process is generally gaining momentum now. The idea is to, because the threats to U.S. security, as seen in Washington anyway, are no longer so much in East Asia and in Western Europe, which was the case during the Cold War era. Now the central area of concern, as I say, is the region of the Persian Gulf, the Caspian Sea, and Africa. And so the Pentagon is trying to build up its capacity to fight in those areas. This bears, of course, on the war in Iraq, because one of the goals, I believe, of that war is for the U.S. to establish permanent bases in Iraq that it could use to dominate this entire region. And if you look closely at what's coming out of Washington, they say we're going to draw down our troops in Iraq when things get better, ha ha.
Yeah.
But there's no talk about withdrawing from these permanent bases.
Well, I understand from what I've read, these are really permanent bases. They are huge. I mean, they've got because Rumsfeld has been talking about sort of forward operating locations, which are sort of, they're there to be used in case of, some emergency of some kind or other. But these bases in Iraq, I mean, I don't know how many there are, 8, 10, 12 or something?
Well, there are many. There are many small ones, but they're talking about 4 or 5 very large permanent facilities. I mean, giant facilities with runways, with small American-style suburban cities and malls for American troops. Mm-hmm. That would be, the bastion of American strength in the greater Persian Gulf region.
And what if the Iraqi government says, no, we don't want them?
Well, Iraqi governments have been known to disappear overnight, as we know.
Uh-huh. Well, you wonder if this is behind the movement that's still going on to, there's a lot of pressure on the Iraqi Shiite parties to dump al-Jafri.
That's right.
The U.S. doesn't like him, and they like this fellow, what's his name, al-Mahdi? He is the vice president now.
Yeah, I'm afraid I can't say.
Uh-huh. And apparently he is more of a neo-lib kind of guy, and I've heard before that he is sort of in favor of privatizing oil and doing things like that.
Well, that would not surprise me that the U.S. would be favoring someone who holds those views.
Well, you wonder, how much control do you think the U.S. has? They seem to be losing control all the time, but maybe I'm reading it wrong.
It's hard to, for us who are out here, far distant from the scene, to be absolutely sure. But remember, we're talking about a government that basically rules only the green zone, the fortified area in the middle of Baghdad that's protected by American troops. So we're talking about a government that probably has very little control over the rest of the country, but is very much under the thumb of the U.S. within that protected area.
Uh-huh.
So just how much influence the U.S. really has over this situation is unclear. I think it's slipping by the moments in the rest of the country.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's hold on to that, because we have to take, I don't know if you know, we're in the middle of our membership drive, and we're going to have to take a little break to go ask people for money. So hang on and feel free to... Well, take a break, and we will do our little money pitch, and then we'll get back to our conversation.
Okay.
Okay, I think we can go to Membership Central.
Hello, Pear.
Hi, Bill. Hey.
Yeah.
Haven't seen you for a while.
I know. It must be 10 minutes since I walked away from the front desk.
Mm-hmm.
I have a really important thing to say about our pledge drive, and that is 503-232-8818. That is the local telephone number. And then there's 1-877-500-5266. That's the number for folks outside of the 503 area code. I am joined by the lovely Melanie Silverwolf.
That's Melody. Melody.
Yes, Melody.
And
I'm joined by
Will Mictum over here.
Joined by my lovely brain. But don't ignore that, but don't ignore Melody. And do call. We have our lovely phone answerers awaiting you.
We do.
And, idle hands are the devil's playground, so get them busy.
And, Pear has been doing public affairs on KBOO since before I was involved.
Born.
It's been a long time, about 12 years at least. And, he really knows his stuff, and we're fortunate to have someone like Pear, and he really does his homework. He reads extensively, and he brings you the real deal. you know, you may tune into other sources or read them on the internet or in the newspapers to get political analysis, but you're not going to find anybody anywhere that's as up on the progressive movement as Per Fogering. And he's a real joy to have, and I hope you show your support by calling 503-232-8818. There's a reason that he's leading off the Radio Zine today on Public Affairs Day, and that's because he's awesome. So let's show our support for him and all the work he does, all the analysis and the pithy commentary that he brings to you. 503-232-8818. And for those of you who live out in the hinterlands, I know you deeply appreciate KBOO because it may be the only progressive culture that you have access to, because not everybody who lives in the country is progressive. 1-877-500-KBOO is the number for you to call.
And remember that our guest, Per's guest, is Michael Clare. And if you want to contribute $60 or more, and remember that's $5 a month out of your checking account, so it's just a tidbit of money every month.
It's just nothing. I mean, really.
You can get Blood and Oil by Michael Clare. And that is our gift to you for your gift to us. It's all about being informed. It's all about public affairs and news on KBOO. And ultimately, it's all about your calling, 503-232-8818.
Or maybe you're more of an online kind of person. You can do that too. www.kboo.fm. You click on Join Now. And if you do choose to join online, there's special online-only thank you gifts. So that's really easy to do. We're going to have a really exciting new website coming in April. It's been a long time coming, and we're very, very pleased that that's going to be happening. And so if you're really an online junkie, you go ahead and join that way. You, of course, can listen to us online. We stream all over the world. And so we do get people calling in from all over the world as well. So you might want to go that way. And if you want to come down in person, we're at 20 Southeast 8th. If you come down and pay your pledge in person, you can meet and greet. We'll give you a coffee mug. Hey, what can you say? What a deal.
It is a deal. And not only that, you get to meet all of us, and which gives you a much stronger feeling for your community. Because when you are a member of KBOO, you are part of a true community. That's because we are volunteer-driven. There are some paid staff, though they're not like normal paid staff, because they have that same volunteer attitude, which is they love it. That's why they're here. That is the primary reason for people being at KBOO.
Well, that's the real meaning of the word amateur. It means someone who does things, something for the love of it. And that's what we're all about here. We only have, I think we have 10 paid staff, 9 paid staff. One of them's half-time. And the rest of us, there's nearly 400 some of us, are all volunteer. We don't get paid a dime except in the gratification of our, you know, the enjoyment of what we're doing and the enjoyment of creating something for the community. And you can get involved in that, too. We don't just want your money. We want all of you. We want your time and your energy if you've got it to spare. And you, too, can get involved. You can come down, be on committees, you know, learn to engineer. All kinds of things are going on at KBOO. And all you have to do to get started is call 503-232-8818.
And, you know, the more you call now, the quicker we're going to get back to Per and Michael Clare. I want to remind you again that Blood and Oil by Mr. Clare is one of our gifts to you for a $60 minimum pledge. So if you have $60 right now or $5 a month for the next year, you can get a copy of that book as a gift to you from us for your generosity. And it all starts, as Melody said, 503-232-8818. And the out-of-town phone number, which is on our dime, 1-877-500-5266, and online at www.kboo.fm. And you give us a call, like those phones are ringing. That's what we like
to hear. Keep
them coming. And then you can talk to one of the phone answerers who will help you get the book, become a member, find out why it is that you like KBOO. All the things that we want to know about the people who listen.
Well, you know, maybe the book isn't your style. Maybe you're just overwhelmed with information, and, you know, listening to the program is enough information for you on that topic. But you might want to think about one of our fabulous T-shirts. We still have the classic Matt Worker KBOO versus the Media Zillas T-shirt, a full-color extravaganza of Godzilla attempting to stomp us out, and we're, our brave little plane is attacking him. We have a wonderful flower T-shirt that shows flowers growing out of our tower by the fabulous artist Chris Andre, who we are blessed to have as a volunteer here. She does the news every Friday. Those are all for the $60 pledge for the Media Zillas T-shirt, and the flower T-shirt, $75. And we also have a new Chris shirt, which is a wonderful picture from the WTO, and the caption says, KBOO, we put the riot back in Patriot. And that's also for a $75 pledge. So for those of you who need more, who are more into T-shirts than books, you might want to go for that. We have all kinds of wonderful gifts to entice you. All you got to do is call 503-232-8818.
And don't forget 1-877-500-5266.
That's right.
And in the next minute, we want to have...
We want our lines to be all full.
Yes, all full. Before we go back to Michael Clare, who is talking about oil and with Pear Fogering, of course.
You know what they say, that idle hands do the devil's work, and you don't want our phone answers to be tempted to get up to devilry, so you better call and keep them busy.
503-232-8818. Yes, so give us a call, 1-877-500-KBOO, or for the alphabetically challenged, 5266. We want your call. We want your money. We want you as part of our community.
Maybe Uncle Sam wants you, but we want you more, so call.
Okay, I think we're back with our conversation. I believe we were talking about how much control the U.S. exerts over Iraq. Is that where we left off?
Oh, I think so, that and bases and grand strategy.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think the grand strategy is? I mean, they're moving there's a Pentagon report where they're talking about Eastern European countries kind of struggling, I guess there's a quote here, struggling to feed their populations with a falling supply of food, water, and energy, eyeing Russia, whose population is already in decline, for access to its grain, minerals, and energy supply.
Yes, this is a 2003 Pentagon Commission report on the effects of severe climate change, looking about 20 years into the future, 25 years into the future, when climate change really kicks in and starts devastating large parts of the world, producing food shortages and massive numbers of refugees. This is one vision of the future, and I think it's a realistic vision, but that's not the vision that prevails at the Department of Defense and the White House today. The vision that prevails in Washington, I believe, is, as you said earlier, a new great game, a new geopolitical contest between the U.S., Russia, and China. And this is heating up. The Pentagon really is putting China in the crosshairs now in a way it hasn't since the Cold War period, and the Chinese are getting very worried. In my mind, this is the most dangerous situation we face in the world today.
Well, can't, China, can't they sort of dump the dollar anytime they want?
No, they can't without committing economic suicide.
Well, it would hurt them, too, but if they feel beleaguered enough, wouldn't they, if they had no other option, say?
I think they would do that only if Taiwan declared independence and the U.S. said we're going to defend Taiwan. In that case, you're talking about a pre-war situation that could escalate into nuclear war. So dumping dollars would only be one aspect of a much bigger crisis.
Well, I suppose you could use a threat. I mean, if you can sort of slowly get out of dollars, which apparently China is doing. I've been reading interesting stories to that effect, that they are kind of sort of slowly getting out of dollars into gold and euros and whatever. And if they just kind of give the warning, if they hint that they may get out of dollars to a greater degree, that That's kind of like a little shot across the bow, isn't it?
Well, I don't read the situation quite that way. Mm-hmm. I think that the Chinese leadership has, as its number one objective by far, is continuing to modernize the economy and boost the economy. The Communist Party leadership rests its legitimacy in producing wealth for the middle class in China and producing jobs. And the dollars that they buy are to stimulate the United States consumers in this country to run to Walmart and buy as much Chinese stuff as they possibly can. So, and I don't think that the Chinese leadership wants to threaten that right now. So, until the situation gets more tense, and under those circumstances, I think you could see that. But right now, I think China is still pushing a high growth economic scenario, and that means selling their stuff to us. Mm-hmm. We're the consumers that keep the Chinese economy afloat.
Well, don't they realize that this can only go on so long that, you know, that they will probably never be able to provide automobiles and oil for all their people, that they're going to have to switch to a kind of a lesser reliance on oil themselves?
Yes, they're beginning to talk about that just very, very recently, because until 2006, the Chinese leadership had the goal of, you know, a car for every other family or something like that, because they thought that would keep the middle class happy and keep them off their backs. But now they're so worried about oil, you're quite right about that, that they're beginning to slow down the mass production of cars. Or at least what they are doing is putting, and this would be a good lesson for our own country, I might add, they've reorganized their tax structure this month so that if you buy a very small fuel-efficient car, the tax rate is very low, the sales tax. If you buy an SUV or a big car, your sales tax is two or three times higher so as to discourage gas guzzlers. And that, I think, is a very intelligent idea that we should follow in this country.
Mm-hmm. I know it's been talked about, but it doesn't seem to be happening. But it seemed to me that in this great game, I think if China and Russia, you know, they seem to be getting a lot closer. They have this Shanghai Cooperation Organization. And if China and Russia and Iran form some kind of alliance, and, you know, including maybe some of the Central Asian republics also, don't they have a big advantage there? Because actually Iran and Russia are producing oil, at least for now. And if they use the oil, you know, within their region, they would have an advantage over the U.S., which has to get its oil from Africa or wherever.
Well, this really is the big question. This is what I think is the central theme of American foreign policy, this tripartite struggle between the U.S., China, and Russia. And it's being played out at a very high rate of frenzy, I would say. But bear in mind that just as we have our weaknesses, so do Russia and China. For example, you mentioned Iran. I think there's a very high likelihood that the United States will attack Iran before 2006 is over, probably before the November congressional elections. I think President Bush is going to say, well, the UN didn't work. The Iranians are pursuing nuclear weapons. We can't permit that. We're going to bomb all of their nuclear facilities. And the fact is, Russia and China will yell bloody murder, but they don't have the military capacity to prevent the United States from doing that. Mm-hmm. So the U.S. still has military superiority, if nothing else, and I fear that the Bushies will use that to try to gain more power in the region.
What about, there's been a lot of talk about Iran. Well, they didn't do it yet. It was opening up what they call an oil bourse, which is they sell their oil for euros.
Yes, they talked about that, but they've backed off on that, and I don't think that's what's at root here of the problem, because the world's oil market continues to be denominated largely in dollars, and the Saudis and the Kuwaitis and the other Persian Gulf countries, which have much bigger supplies of oil, are wedded to the dollar because their protection relies on the U.S., and that's part of the insurance policy they pay for continued American protection. So I don't worry about that. I do worry about the regime in Iran really moving ahead with this nuclear project that would serve as an excuse, if nothing else, for the U.S. to attack Iran and try to bring about regime change. And regime change in Iran is the ultimate objective, as it was in Iraq, because once there's regime change in Iran, then you could put in a pro-Western government that would allow U.S. oil companies to come in. This, I think, is the ultimate objective.
Yeah, but so many cooler heads have said that this would be a disastrous thing to do. I mean, it's just, you know, maybe the people in Washington are as crazy as we think they are, but it just seems that Iran has so many ways of striking back.
Yes, I hear this argument, and I think an irrational discussion that would prevail. But remember, in 2002, the same voices were heard about the irrationality of invading Iraq. There were plenty of people who were saying before the invasion that Iraq is unstable, that the Shiites and the Sunnis will start a civil war, that Americans will be killed in large numbers.
All of which came true.
Yeah, and that didn't stop Bush because he believes that he was ordained by the Almighty, you know, to bring Western-style democracy or whatever it is he thinks. We don't really know what goes on in his head. He made the decision to invade Iraq, and I think he's perfectly capable of making the decision to attack Iran, even though it could bring about chaos in the Middle East.
Do you think that cooler heads would stop him in one way or another?
There are only two people who can stop him, and that's Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, and I think they share his views. So
I'm talking about, say, the high military officials or just people. You know, there are, you know, there's a chain of command on paper, but there are some very influential people in this country who, you know, they exercise their power behind the scenes.
And yes, and we know what happened to those people in 2002. Mm-hmm. They were axed when they put up resistance to the invasion of Iraq. Remember, I think the man, the Army Chief of Staff.
Oh, General Shinseki?
Yeah, Shinseki said that we need 300,000 or more troops, and he was more or less fired.
Mm-hmm.
And so the people who are left. And this is the danger about the Bush administration. This is precisely the danger, is that critics have been eliminated, and now you only have yes men. And you have what Colin Powell's assistant called a cabal that rules in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Bush. And they're yes men. And they don't hear these rational voices. They tune them out. That's the biggest danger about the administration.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Michael Rupert in his From the Wilderness says he suspects that the U.S. and Iran may possibly be cooking up some deal. They are having talks or going to have talks on the situation in Iraq. And what Rupert says is that the announcement of this, or the announcement that Iran is delaying its oil bores, came from Russia and China. So Rupert suspects that there is some kind of negotiating going on behind the scenes. He's not coming out and saying it's for fact. He's just saying this is something he is looking at very seriously.
Mm-hmm. Well, Michael Rupert often has interesting ideas, but they don't all pan out.
True.
So listeners should be cautious. I mean, it's always stimulating, but sometimes he gets it wrong. I prefer an alternative source for analysis, which is TomDispatch.com,
mm-hmm.
a commentary service of The Nation magazine. TomDispatch.com. Listeners can get that by going to that site, and I think they'll find it a very useful source of analysis.
That's Tom Engelhardt, I believe.
That's Tom Engelhardt, mm-hmm. Absolutely right.
Well, it's getting close to 9:35. We're going to take a 5-minute break, and then at 9:40 we will be back for another 10 minutes. And I think in the next segment I would like to talk about sort of what will be a rational way to deal with these looming shortages in oil and water and everything else. So why
sure.
Why don't we take a 5-minute break, and I hope that people will call in and then give us some really good time after the break is over.
Okay, Pear. Nice short break filled with phone numbers. 503-232-8818. That's our local Portland area number, and 1-877-500-5266. That's for everywhere else in the country and Canada. And for everywhere else in the world, KBOO.FM on the web where we are streaming, and you can just click join now. All of those places are where you can become a member or renew your membership. And we want to thank the following: Kurt, Becky, and Harriet, all of Portland, and Gordon in Oregon City, thank you for either becoming or renewing your membership. These are people who know how important it is to support KBOO, that KBOO is the place where you hear Michael Clare, and you hear him at length. We don't specialize, as a matter of fact, we avoid the soundbite style of so-called journalism. We go in depth. We go in depth. We talk to the people who are looking at the issues, involved with the issues, and we bring them to you. And you can bring us into your lives in the most total way by calling 503-232-8818. 1-877-500-5266, and contributing some of your hard-earned cash to us. There are so many ways to do it, of course, and we start at $20 for the poverty-stricken and move on up to, say, $5 a month, which is $60 a year, $10 a month, $100 a month. We're not fussy. The more, the better. But we do want to say that we can't do it without our membership. Our membership is our station. I am a member. I am a volunteer. I come here every 6 months to whine and beg and get other people to become part of this family. And it is a wonderful family to be a member of. And speaking of members of the family, I want to thank the Cup and Saucer who provided breakfast today. And Huber's will be giving us lunch. And Pazzo Ristorante, or however one says it in Italian, will be providing dinner. These are all members of our community because they're just doing it at their commitment to KBOO. And your commitment to KBOO is going to be enhanced, by the way, when you become a member. And becoming a member also gives you the opportunity to get blood and oil by our guest, Michael Clare. That would be a $60 donation minimum. And remember that you can do that with a $5 a month contribution out of your bank account so that it is the least painful, barely noticeable, and yet you get all this really great information. So we want you to give us the calls at 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-5266, if you're not in the 503 area code, and that's a free call, free for you at least. And, of course, if you're listening on the web or want to listen on the web in the future, that's kboo.fm, and you can listen to us there. And you can join by clicking on the Join Now button and become a member, get the book, get any number of other possible gifts that we give to our new members and anybody who renews. So do indeed check us out. 503-232-8818. 1-877-500-5266. Those are the phone numbers. We want you to call. We want you to get Michael Clare's book, Blood and Oil. If you want it, we want you most especially to be part of the KBOO family. Affect the programming that you listen to. Let's go back to Pear and Mr. Clare.
Okay. One thing that people don't talk about too much is that the International Energy Agency has a kind of an emergency plan of sorts, and they have a treaty with 26 nations, including the United States, that in the event of an oil emergency, that oil will be kind of allocated or rationed.
Well, that's correct. This was a response to the Arab oil embargo of 1973-74, when the Arab oil countries cut off the flow of oil to the United States because of our support of Israel in the October 73 war. Some listeners may recall that time of the long gas lines. So the International Energy Agency does have this goal of it's a sort of mutual aid pact of the industrialized nations, that they'll share energy with each other in the case of an event like that. Now this is important because it's also related to the construction of petroleum reserves, strategic petroleum reserves in the United States and in Europe. We didn't have that in 73, but now we have hundreds of millions of barrels of oil stockpiled in the U.S. and in Europe. And I think that when President Bush thinks about attacking Iran, remember we said before that that's a real possibility, and you commented that there are all these concerns, for example, an oil blow up. But this time around, the U.S. does have some backup plans in the sense of these petroleum reserves, and I think it might encourage him to believe that we could do this without paying a very high price. I don't agree with it, but that in any case is the situation.
How long will those reserves last? Now, they'd obviously last longer if the oil in those reserves was rationed, and not just, you know, first come, first serve.
Sure. Well, there's supposed to be approximately 6 months' worth of imports.
Mm-hmm.
So that's quite a bit of oil, and presumably, the plan is to give us a buffer against a crisis in the Middle East. Now, any crisis that lasted more than 6 months, we'd be in real trouble, mm-hmm. obviously.
Well, it seems to me that, you know, that the U.S. and other nations, especially the U.S., are coming to a real basic choice that right now, the way our system works, oil, like any other commodity, is sort of rationed according, you know, by price. If you got the money for it, you got it, you know. And if you have the only other way to ration it is by need. And so can you envision, say, a situation where people are freezing in their homes while oil is going for cruise ships to Bermuda and that kind of stuff? or do you think people would just kind of rebel and say, hey, you know, you got to take care of the basics?
Yeah, well, I think that this is the sort of thing that some states have given some thought to, you know, and I think there is a certain amount of planning. I can't say exactly what that might be, but price will be, you know, the way that this will be played out in most cases, and that's a situation that obviously will penalize poorer people. You know, that's what happened in Hurricane Katrina. That's what we learned about Hurricane Katrina, is that when things go bad, it's poor people who are going to suffer the most. Better off people can pay a higher price for petroleum, and it's not going to affect them. It's poor people who are going to suffer. And here in the East, we're very, very grateful that this was a relatively mild winter. I don't know what it was like in Portland, but the East and the Midwest had an unusually mild winter, and this probably saved a lot of lives because natural gas is increasingly in short supply in this country, and that's what provides a lot of the home heating in the eastern part of the United States. And if this had been a severe winter, the price of natural gas would have been unaffordable for poor people and the elderly, people on pensions, and there could have been terrible suffering. So we really are grateful here for the warm, relatively mild winter we had.
Well, do you think the American people would allow that kind of thing? Say next winter is a bad winter. Do you think the American people would just sort of allow people to freeze and not have the government step in, even, you know, that they would force the government to take steps?
I think you're right to ask this question. I do think that there's growing pressure on politicians to address our energy crisis. It's not just scarcity that people are becoming concerned about. It's also about the greenhouse gas effect. I think there's growing concern in this country about global warming, global climate change, and this is very much related to our consumption of fossil fuels, oil, gas, and coal in particular. And it's the scientific evidence is becoming increasingly powerful, persuasive, that the heating up of the climate is happening faster even than some people feared. You see this with the melting of the Arctic ice cap. And this is going to raise sea levels and cause flooding and more intense hurricanes, among other things.
Well, so there goes Florida.
There goes Florida.
Except for Mount Trashmore outside of Tampa.
Well, there are computer simulations of where Florida will be in 2100 or 2150, showing that two-thirds of the state will be underwater by that time.
Mm-hmm.
So as this perception gains momentum, I do think that the pressure on leaders, political leaders, to take a stronger stance on global warming and cut back the use of these fuels is going to grow stronger.
Well, it seems that, the U.S. Right now seems to be pursuing what Richard Heinberg calls a last man standing strategy, you know, which is really kind of, well, like the last person to drown on the Titanic or something. This is just crazy. And I think, you wonder how long will they keep pursuing this?
Yeah, well, I don't think we're quite there yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have a window of opportunity that might last another decade or so, in which if we do have good leadership in Washington and in state houses around the country, it is possible to turn this around. We're not at the point of impact with that iceberg quite yet. We will be there in all likelihood in another decade or so, when it'll be too late to avert catastrophic climate change. So it's really crucial that people around the country, your listeners, start taking action to address the global climate change issue, to press for reforms of our oil policy, for higher fuel standards, for green technology. This is the struggle of the 21st century, and we have to get started on it now.
Well, you need about 10 years to even do a strategy like that. But do you think the U.S. might try and seize the Saudi oil fields? Think that's a possibility?
Yes, I think it's a possibility if the royal family is overthrown and a radical Taliban government takes over and threatens to cut off the flow of oil to the West. I think an invasion of Saudi Arabia would be a very real possibility. Actually, I think that even in the event of a serious revolt against the House of Saud, the U.S. would intervene. President Reagan said in 1983, he said, or 1982, after the Shah of Iran was overthrown, people might remember that, Reagan said, we're not going to allow Saudi Arabia to become another Iran. You know, we're not going to allow the overthrow of the royal family. So if you saw a serious revolt in Saudi Arabia, I think U.S. would intervene. Remember, there are American troops there and nearby and have been for a very long time.
Well, they could seize it. Then there's a question, could they hold it? And could they get any oil out of there through the Straits of Hormuz?
Well, that's something that I'm sure the U.S. military, the Central Command in Tampa, has been worrying about and planning about for a very long time. It happens that the oil fields are isolated from much of the rest of the country. They're up there on the Persian Gulf. And this is one area in Saudi Arabia where Shiites are among the majority. There is a Shiite minority in Saudi Arabia, but it's heavily concentrated in the oil-producing area. And in the event of a struggle with Iran, this is where I would expect Iran perhaps to retaliate by stirring up the Shiites. And I think in that case, the U.S. would get deeply involved in suppressing such a revolt if it threatened the flow of oil.
It might try to take over the Iranian oil fields right across the border, too.
Well, that's absolutely true, too.
Well, I think we're going to have to end here. We've been talking with Michael Clare, who is a professor at Amherst College. He will be in town on April 21st talking about oil, water, and global security, and that is at the First Congregational Church, which is down at 1126 Southwest Park. So thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, and I look forward to meeting people from Portland on April 21st.
You know, I think we're having some kind of an, while you're going to be talking that night, we'll have the National Federation of Community Broadcasters are going to be in town at that time, and I believe we're having an open house on the 21st.
Uh-huh.
So maybe come on down and visit us.
Very good.
Visit our palatial corporate headquarters here.
All right.
Thank
Take
you
care.
Very much. Bye. Okay, we've been talking with Michael Clare about something that should be of vital interest to all of us. And, you know, this is the kind of discussion that you don't hear much of, certainly not on the sort of the commercial radio, which is sort of the mainstream radio, which I think of as that's where the poopaganda flows the deepest. You know, but here at KABU, you know, we bring you stuff like this. And you don't really, you know, you get some of it on the other public broadcasting stations. But, you know, KABU has got an edge. We have got sort of a little sharper vision. And you know, if you want to hear this sort of thing, then this is the place to go. And we are very happy to give you this kind of program because it's what we want to do. It's what we are really vitally interested in. And we do, one of the things we have to offer besides just hearing discussions like this is that you can, by making your pledge, you can get the book, which you can read at your leisure. You know, sometimes a radio conversation goes by real fast and you don't really remember what was said. Sometimes I don't even remember what I said. But if you have a book, you know, you can read it at your, you know, when you have the time to devote to it. And if you there's something you don't understand and you want to check out some more, you can go back and reread it. And that's a nice thing about books, you know, that they are there, you know, at your beck and call, as it were.